So the first lesson for Christmas Day comes from a Christmas carol written on December 19th, 1843, while getting ready to celebrate Christmas at his church, the Little Portland Unitarian Church in England. "Now, I'll tell you what, my friend," said Scrooge. "I am not going to stand for this sort of thing any longer. And therefore," he continued, leaping from his stool and giving Bob such a dig in the waistcoat that he staggered back to the tank again, "and therefore, I am about to raise your salary." Bob trembled and got a little nearer to the ruler. He had a momentary idea of knocking Scrooge down with it, holding him and calling the people in the court for help and a straight waistcoat, a straitjacket. "A Merry Christmas, Bob," said Scrooge, with an earnestness that could not be mistaken as he clapped him in the back. "A merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family, and we will discuss your affairs this very afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop, Bob." Smoking bishop is a kind of mulled wine. "Make up the fires and buy another coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit," said Scrooge. Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all, and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was like a second father. He became as good a friend, and as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city had ever known, or any other city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh, and little heeded them, for he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good at which some people did not have their fill of laughter at the outset. And knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins as have the malady in less attractive forms. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. He had no further intercourse with spirits, but lived on the total abstinence principle ever afterwards. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed that knowledge. May that be truly said of us, and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone. The second lesson for Christmas Day is from the Reverend Tracy Springberry of Washington State, who in a sermon on Christmas a few years ago said this.
"It was Unitarians who wove together Santa Claus, Christmas trees, gift-giving around the tree, focus on charity, and peace and goodwill toward all to create the Christmas that the majority of Americans celebrate today. And while the story of the baby Jesus was not left out, what was central to this holiday was not the coming of God in a human form for the atonement of human sins, as it was for conservative Christians, but Unitarian values and theology."
Last year, the great radio personality Garrison Keillor got all upset when he went to a Unitarian Universalist Christmas service in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Turns out they had changed a few words in the Christmas carols, and he said it was not right because he, being a true Christian, had the right to celebrate Christmas the right way, and there was only one right way to do it, and he knew it, and the Unitarians should just bug off. And he said this in a way that many people thought, well, maybe he was being funny, because that's one of his jobs, is to be funny. But when I read it, I could tell he was actually very angry and very upset and disappointed. He felt that Christmas could be celebrated one way, his way. He was raised in a particular denomination and then changed denominations, but apparently the way Christmas was celebrated was the way that it should be celebrated for everyone. When I was growing up, I celebrated Christmas, but we never did what we do here on Christmas Eve. Here on Christmas Eve, we light candles. When I was growing up, candle lighting was done at Easter, not at Christmas. There was nothing about Christmas that had to do with candles at all. Which way is the right way to celebrate Christmas, with or without candles? There's actually a lot more Catholics than there are Protestants. Maybe they should win. It's a democracy, after all. But the fact is, the right way of celebrating Christmas is a mistaken notion to begin with. And particularly this morning, I want to point out to Mr. Keillor, we invented Christmas, the Unitarians and the Universalists. And I'm taking this as a very serious statement, an historical statement, but also a sign of how we move through the world theologically. Back at the time of the Revolutionary War, after the Constitution was written and Congress was in session, Congress met on Christmas Day. It was no big thing to them. All of the people on television, the talking heads who talk about this as a Christian nation, won't tell you that. That Congress, with all of these people that they lift up, met on Christmas Day because Christmas was not important. And as many of you know, Christmas was forbidden in many of the colonies, and you had to go to work on that day whether you liked to or not, no matter what your religion was. You had to work on that day. Christmas was not celebrated by the Puritan pious because there's no place in the Bible where it says, celebrate the birth of Jesus. The stories are there, but there's nothing that says, do it. They found words that say, baptize people, do that, so they did it. They found the words, do this in memory of me, so they did that. But they didn't find, do Christmas, and so they refused to do it. That was one way of dealing with Christmas, simply just not celebrate it. But there was another way of celebrating Christmas. It was found in England, but it was found especially in this country too. The 12 days of Christmas were 12 days of drunken revelry. And I mean drunken revelry. I mean falling down on the floor, drunken revelry, and dancing and all that stuff. There was no church services that people wanted to go to, but they sure wanted to get drunk. So wassail and all those punches that we hear about, the smoking bishop, the wine that's the spiced wine that Dickens talks about, there were all kinds of those punches, and people drank them liberally. And many people didn't go to work on Christmas because they couldn't get up to go to work on Christmas. Now, of course, there's always been celebrations at the time of the solstice that involved revelry. After all, Christmas was, in the West, Christmas was celebrated at the time of Saturnalia, about 350, almost 400 years after Jesus died. Christmas was finally celebrated by the Western Church and put on the week of Saturnalia, which was a solstice festival in honor of the god Saturn that involved drinking and partying and even involved some mistletoe, I understand. But Christmas for a long time was not a big deal, and it certainly didn't involve Christmas trees or presents or things that we associate with Christmas nowadays. But our ancestors, our liberal ancestors, who call themselves eventually Unitarian and Universalist, felt, kind of like the Buddha did, that the middle path was the best response to this Christmas confusion. The middle path was, do not drink yourself under the table for 12 days, and don't be so ridiculous as to not celebrate it because there's not a commandment. That's ridiculous. Something in between. So, here's what happened. Charles Fallon, a minister in New England, the church is still there. It's an octagonal church. It's quite lovely. Charles Fallon taught German at Harvard, and he knew about German customs. One of the customs that legendarily started with Martin Luther, but probably predates him by several centuries, was the idea of decorating a tree, a pine tree or a fir tree, at Christmas time. His wife was German, so he put up a tree in his house back in the 1700s. No one had ever seen a decorated tree before, with candles on the branches and all kinds of beautiful glass ornaments, which he had imported from Germany. He had many, many guests over to the parsonage, and all of them were delighted. And most of them were Unitarian because Fallon was a Unitarian minister. And they wrote about their experience of visiting the Fallon house. They wrote about it in all kinds of magazines and publications. And within a period of a single decade, the idea of setting up a Christmas tree spread all across this country. And it's hard to imagine this time of year without a Christmas tree. Even my Jewish friends often set up a Hanukkah bush in their house. Clement Moore wrote a very famous poem about Saint Nick, Santa Claus. "'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. Wouldn't you believe it? He was Unitarian. And he took the old Christian story of Saint Nicholas of Myra, who was a Christian bishop and whose name is associated with pawn shops, and who was famous for doing good deeds for children especially. He took that story and rewrote it in a different way. There had been no talk of such an elf before. But all of a sudden, this became a masterpiece of Christmas marketing, and everyone all of a sudden was involved with Santa Claus, Saint Nick. In the poem, he doesn't live at the North Pole. But Thomas Nash, wouldn't you believe it, a Unitarian, was the one who decided that because all the children of the world should be given gifts, should be treated fairly and the same, Unitarian values. He must live at the North Pole, because from the North Pole, you can come down in any direction to any country equally and fairly. Samuel Coleridge, a very famous poet, Rime of the Ancient Mariner. Wouldn't you believe it, a Unitarian. He traveled to Germany one winter, where Christmas is a really big thing. If you've never been to Germany at Christmas time, you might want to do that sometime if you can. It's absolutely amazing. It's the most decorated country in the world. When he was in Germany, he saw an interesting ritual around the fir tree that had been brought indoors and decorated. Not only did he see children receiving gifts from their parents, but he saw children giving gifts to their parents at the base of the tree. This is what he wrote. There were 8 or 9 children, and the eldest daughter and the mother wept aloud for joy and tenderness, and the tears ran down the face of the father. And he clasped his children so tight to his breast, it seemed as if he did it to stifle the sob that was rising within him. I was very much affected. This story of Coleridge was published in the Christian Register, which was the official Unitarian magazine back in the 19th century. The idea of gift giving around the tree, parents giving to children and children giving to parents, before the Santa Claus story had become nestled in the tradition, became a custom in this country because of what Coleridge wrote. Again, the magazines took this story and spread it around. The Christmas carols. We sang one this morning, written by Heather Lynn Hansen. Beautiful. Telling us that Christmas is about love. It is. And it's about the baby. And it's about the stories. Absolutely. And it's about other things, too. It's about generosity. It's about telling the truth. It's about giving gifts and receiving them without saying, oh, please, not me. Learning how to actually receive a gift is as important as giving one. It's about love, and it's about peace. Yes, the baby, but all the things the baby grew up and taught when he was an adult. Christmas is about that. And our ancestors knew that. So when they wrote Christmas carols, they made it a little real. They did carols like, It Came Upon a Midnight Clear, which talks about war and how war has destroyed humanity. Over 2,000 years of wrong are the words that Unitarian Edmund Hamilton Sears writes in the carol. Here's the great gift of Jesus teaching, love your enemies, live at peace with each other, talk to each other, love each other. And people are fighting tooth and nail all the time and decking each other and lying to each other and taking from each other. And he said, this is wrong. Christmas is about values. It's about peace. The angel sang about peace. Peace on earth, goodwill toward all. Why is that not Christmas, he wrote in his carol. And Longfellow, Wadsworth Longfellow, the famous poet that we had to memorize his long, long lines in grade school, Unitarian, wouldn't you believe, wrote, I saw the bells on Christmas Day and talked about war there because his son had been shot in the Civil War with a bullet that went right through to his spine and affected him the rest of his life. It was not long after his wife had burned to death in a fire in a library. He knew that Christmas had to do with real things, and it wasn't just sweetness and light, but it had to do with the values of facing life as it is, with courage, with peace, with love, with tenderness. But that life itself doesn't just give you that. You have to bring your attitude toward it. Puritanism, in any form, is dangerous. In any form. When someone tells me the real meaning of Christmas is Jesus, the real meaning of Christmas is the solstice, the real meaning of Christmas are all the pagan things associated with it, the mistletoes and the wreaths. The real meaning of Christmas is this or that. I'm sorry, I don't believe it. It's all of it. It's mixed together. There is no pure. There never has been. There never will be. We tend to think of this country as being founded by a bunch of English people who came over here on the East Coast and Spanish people who came over here from the South. And we never tell the story about how German Jews fought in the Revolutionary War. African Americans who were not slaves fought in the Revolutionary War. Italians, French, Swedes, all fought in the Revolutionary War, the French. It's been multicultural since the beginning. It's been blending since the beginning. It's not some new thing with the arrival of immigrants. We have this mythological idea as to what America is about. It's been about mixing, blending from the very beginning. And there is no way to have a pure Christmas. There is a very powerful evangelical minister who has written an article about that tender Unitarian Christmas in which he is begging his congregation and his religious association to give up all of the things that Unitarians brought to Christmas, to purify it so it's only about the babe, and it's only about the babe growing up and dying to save people on the cross. That's all Christmas is about. Get rid of the trees. Get rid of all the generosity and the goodness for goodness' sake. And make it about the babe and the incarnation. And everything else is impure. I'm sorry. That's dangerous. It leads to a pure race. It leads to a pure religion. It leads to a pure culture. And all of that is not just dangerous, it's malevolent. It hurts people. It breaks their lives. So to Garrison Keillor, I say, you don't have a pure Christmas. It's been changing all the time, and the Unitarians and Universalists weren't the only ones doing it. Sorry, you got that wrong too. John Wesley wrote, the founder of Methodism, he wrote, "Hark now, hear the welkin sing." Do you know what a welkin is? I didn't. It means the sky. It's an old English word. No one uses it anymore. Lots of English words have dropped out over the years because everything changes. Nothing stays the same. And so somebody changed the Christmas carol. Wasn't a Unitarian in this case, but somebody changed the Christmas carol. Carol is a round dance. That's what it means. Carols were not sung in church. They were danced around a fire. And there were carols of all kinds, not just Christmas carols. There were Easter carols, spring carols, autumn carols, summer carols. And people danced them. They moved. Christmas has changed throughout the centuries. And there is no pure form. And I'm happy about that, because it reminds me that everything is growing and changing, and that our country, founded on pluralism, founded on the idea that there can be different ways of believing and different ways of celebrating and different ways of doing everything, has made a great impact on the world, not because we're the land of the free, but because we accept diversity as natural and ordinary and central. And that in a church, a menorah can be lit in solidarity with our Jewish brothers and sisters. And I can preach from the Quran if I want to. And there's nothing wrong with that, because it's all been blended from the beginning, and it's always going to be blended, and nothing is pure. So let's celebrate Christmas in its fullest sense, with all the things that are dear to us, whether it's Santa Claus or Befana or a tree that's decorated like the trees at Macy's, or a circle dance, a carol, or gift giving, or giving to charity, or working at a soup kitchen. It's all Christmas. And nobody can take that away from you. We gave Christmas as a gift to the world, and Christmas gives its own gifts back to us, and always will.